understand. No, you think you've come a long way. No, you think you've come a long way.
As I walk the streets of Skid Row, you can see my hands ain't shaking, but my legs ain't trembling. I turn the corner and keep through the trash. Look up at the street sign, it says Sid and Jillian. Look back down and make eye contact with his brother, and now I'm feeling like I'm standing somewhere I shouldn't be.
Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. I'll call in numbers 800-893-9562. You can listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in skitrow.la and hit Qumran Report. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, our topic is Marcus, Malcolm, Martin, and Mandela. And I'm delighted to have with us in the studio writer Will Ali, his wife Ann Ali, poet and writer Andrea Ross, who will be doing a moving poem on Dr. King entitled Dream On. Also with us in the studio, actor and community activist Lee Shaw, who will be doing some monologues on the speeches of Marcus Garvey. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melvin.
Now, before we get into a discussion of Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Dr. Martin Luther King, and Nelson Mandela, I would like to play a clip from a tape I did on October the 20th, 2005, entitled The Forgotten Tribe of Shabazz. The clip is 4 minutes and 8 seconds.
Now, after J. Edgar Hoover used this methodology to bring down Marcus Garvey and destroy the Universal Negro Improvement Association, as I mentioned, he would perfect this into a technique that would be used in the 60s, most notably against Malcolm X and against Dr. King. Now, what was it really about Minister Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King that made them such a threat to the American ways of life in the eyes of J. Edgar Hoover? The answer to that question is found in a memo by J. Edgar Hoover in response to a discussion about Dr. Martin Luther King. Now, this memo, in which J. Edgar Hoover would send around to most of his trusted FBI agents, would become known as the Hoover Memo. The memo reads, "To prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement, Malcolm X might have been such a messiah. He is a martyr of the movement today. Martin Luther King, Stokely Carmichael, and Elijah Muhammad all aspired to this position. Elijah Muhammad is less a threat because of his age. King could become a very real contender for this position should he abandon his supposed obedience to white liberal doctrine of nonviolence and embrace black nationalism." Now, this was a FBI memorandum that was issued on March 4th, 1968. And keep it in mind, now just a few weeks after that, up in April, the assassination of Martin Luther King in Memphis. The goal of this memo was to prevent the rise of a black messiah who could unify the black masses. Hoover never forgot his experience with Marcus Garvey and the fear that the Garvey movement caused. This was the foundation for the creation of the underground program that I mentioned called COINTELPRO, whose sole purpose was to neutralize any organization deemed un-American. Both Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King had the potential to duplicate the success of the Marcus Garvey movement. As long as Malcolm X was part of the organizational structure of the Nation of Islam under the control of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he was no threat to duplicate the success of Marcus Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association. The same in relationship to Dr. King. As long as Martin Luther King was under the conservative, nonviolent movement of civil rights, he was no threat to duplicate the national and international success of the Marcus Garvey movement. But with the awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize and his opposition to the Vietnam War, this took him, like Malcolm X when he separated from the Nation of Islam, out of the arena of civil rights into the arena of human rights, from the national scene to the international scene. Moved by Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King from the national arena of civil rights to the international arena of human rights, which signed the death warrant.
Now, before we get into our discussion, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio the writer Will Ali. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little about your background and how did you become a writer, et cetera, like that?
Well, first of all, my name is Will Ali, and I am a writer, and I go way back to the days that civil rights wasn't even spoken of. It goes back to the days of Mississippi. I was born in Memphis, but ever so often we would have our family reunion in Mississippi, where most of our relatives were. And naturally, living in that part of the South back in those days, you would naturally run into racism. We was born and raised in racism. So that was my first lesson, racism. So once we moved to Chicago, I was 17 years old. I had finished high school. And we moved to on the west side of Chicago, and I lived there for about, well, actually, it was the time that the murder of Emmett Till. That's what flicked my lights. It was the first light flicker that I had, experiencing the depths of racism. So I was so angry during that time, and rightfully so, I just went to the streets. I had no other place to go. After I went to Emmett Till's funeral, I was so angry until the only thing I could think of was just to go to the street and just fight. But being in the street, I finally ran into the Nation of Islam. I got influenced by the Nation of Islam after listening to Malcolm on TV. And I could naturally relate to it because, I mean, I had experienced it. It wasn't something somebody told me. I experienced racism. So consequently, it didn't take much to influence me to come to the Nation of Islam. And that was the beginning of my enlightenment. So when I became enlightened, I began to write, just taking notes as I thought. And the more I took notes, the better I got in those notes. Then I transformed those notes into books, into a small book. And then later on, I met my wife, my lovely wife that's sitting right here. And she influenced me to go back to school, go back to college, finish my education. And I really began to write. So up to this point, I have written three books. The first one was The Three Levels of Our Rising. The Three Levels of Our Rising is about the three levels of human rising, really, but I put it on this level. I put it on the level of our racial rise. Mm-hmm. We have come through three levels of our rising.
Okay.
And our last rising, which we're on right now, is our spiritual rise. This will close the gate of everything that we have ever experienced and will give us justice for what we have been seeking.
Mm-hmm.
My second book was Familyhood Map. It is about a book that teaching our people, our mothers and our fathers, how to raise a child, the technique in how to raise a child. And you just don't just raise him, you speak to the child's spirit. That's what the book is about. The book that I'm on right now, it takes you back to Memphis. When I was a child, it's a book about when I was coming up in Memphis as a child, a place called Suzette Bottom, the kids of Suzette Bottom. And that's what I'm writing on right now.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah, we hope to, we work with a network of community organizations. One is Bobby Buck. He was at the event last week. And we're going to reach out to him to see if we have any publishers in our network, you know, because that's what we're trying to create the network for, to create some publishers like that. Okay, let's move on and start talking about, I want to get into talking about Marcus Garvey first. Let me throw this out. Why do you think Marcus Garvey received so much opposition from the civil rights leaders of his time?
I believe that this society, this system, knows something about black people that we don't know about ourselves.
Mm.
Nobody would fight you that hard unless they knew something that we didn't know. Obviously, Marcus Garvey found out something about black people. Once you find out that thing about black people, that we can rise up and become self-determined, everybody is afraid because nobody wants to see day. Everybody wants to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons that Marcus Garvey was cut down by some of our own people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing that this thing happens every time a leader in our community rise up. It's telling you who we are. We are more than we think we are and just who they think we are. They know who mm-hmm. we are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, chosen.
Okay. Who have, we also have, of course, we have Ann Ali here. We got Andrea Ross. We got Lee Shaw, Earlene Anthony. So chime in. Anybody else want to chime in? Well, you think Marcus Garvey was so opposed by most of your top civil rights leaders? They used to call them the Committee of Eight,
yeah. You
know, that forced the Attorney General to file charges against Marcus Garvey, end up getting him deported. What do you think the readers?
Well, Marcus brought something that the people weren't used to. See, most of the people, leaders then, they thought that the only way to succeed is to emerge with other people, white people.
Integration.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You went to their school. They taught you what they wanted to know. But see, Marcus Garvey wasn't taught here in America.
Right.
He was taught in Europe.
In Europe.
See, and it's a whole different ball game there. So when he comes here, right, it's in the people. It's already in them, you know, but it's been suppressed. So when he come with his movement, right, self-help, which with Booker T. Washington was talking about, mm-hmm. right, already there, right, he just brought the spirit, just that spirit up out of them. These people had but a few nickels, but he brought that spirit in them out, and it just overwhelmed everybody. Now, for J. Edgar Hoover, it brings about a problem, because yes. how can I shut this dude down before he get too big? And then after a while, these so-called leaders, right, will fade. They will fade. And he used, and J. Edgar Hoover used them
mm-hmm.
against Marcus, right, to put him down. Even then, they still didn't stop him. Only thing stopped him was deportation. The only mm-hmm. thing he had against him in America was that he wasn't a citizen.
Not a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing. Okay. J. Edgar Hoover, he couldn't have stopped him.
Okay. Andrea, you want to say something?
Well, I'm piggybacking on what Lee said, Marcus Garvey being educated from the European set, he was highly intelligent on both sides of the water. He knew about the European method of doing things, and he knew about the American way of suppressing us to be the chosen people that we were chosen to be, the leaders of this world and this nation. His intelligence, he was a dynamic orator, well-spoken. He had a means to rally the people, the masses. Mm-hmm. And as you know, J. Edgar Hoover was not going to have that. Mm-hmm. Because once you have the numbers and the mentality, then you are starting the ball towards self-determination. And J. Edgar Hoover was not going to have us be a self-determined people. Mm-hmm. So he used every tool in the trade to you know, implode us. Mm-hmm. We imploded from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his goal.
There's one thing I want to say. Infuriated J. Edgar Hoover and a lot of other people that wasn't even in this country is that Marcus Garvey's movement wasn't a United States movement. It was a world movement.
Right. International. Right?
I mean, he was everywhere. You know what I'm saying? You bring 25 or 30,000 people to Marcus, to Madison Square Garden in a couple of years, you know, and overload the place where you got so many people, you got to put the speakers outside.
Mm-hmm.
That just tell you
threat.
That people come from everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know.
Now, what was it? Why do you think he was so attractive to the people, to the everyday people? What was it about that movement? You mentioned it was an international movement all over the world. What was it that made it so attractive? And we seem like we can't pull that off today.
Because during that time, most especially black people, we were in poverty. So he spoke to our needs. He spoke to our conscience. He spoke to our morality. He spoke to everything that we were suffering during that time. And the main thing we were suffering during that time was a lack of jobs. And he was saying, do for self. He was the first one that brought that out and brought that word out. Up your mighty nation, you can accomplish what you will. Mm-hmm. He spoke to our needs, our wants, our aspirations. He made us feel that we could do it.
We could do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we can.
Okay. Let's look at some of the, I would like to look at and discuss three concepts that laid the foundation for the success of the Garvey movement. Let's start off first with the self-help program. And this is something that I believe he inherited from Booker T. Washington.
Yeah.
And Booker T. Washington, who set up Tuskegee Institute, et cetera, like that, doing for yourself the whole practical education. What do you think about his self-help program? Let's talk about that for you. Anybody want to comment on what he was trying to achieve with the self-help program? And is it relevant today?
Oh, it's always relevant. One, we find that Marcus Garvey's movement has been then and now would have been the best movement that black folks could have ever got. You know what I'm saying? And those who came after him, right, took a little bit out of the pages, right? And Brother Ali sitting next to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his Whiting Fish, for example.
That's right.
Right? From Peru, right? They had to undermine that and get Peru to stop selling, we got enough fish here in the United States. No. What we don't have is something that's run by black people.
Exactly.
Right? When these people said, boy, right, they want to keep you on the needy side. If you a boy, you supposed to listen to a man talk. Well, I want to be a man. I don't want your cruel love. Mm-hmm. This is what he coming out and brought the people out just like that right there. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, what black man owns a ship right now? That I don't know any. You know what I'm saying? Importing different things and doing in commerce, right? I don't know one.
You know, I was...
Also, Marcus Garvey spoke to our natural sensitivity, our natural sensibility, for the simple reason that deep down in all of our hearts, we know that we should do for self.
Yeah.
Deep down, we know that. So that's the... That's the hidden person within inside of us he spoke to. He spoke to that person so strong until the people had to respond. He spoke to him so strong until he sent it down the line to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm, and everybody else that came behind him. He spoke to our natural being. Do something for yourself. Get up.
And whereas so many of us, we know what the problem is, but most of us don't know what the plan is to get out of the problem.
Solution.
To solve the problem. Solution. So here's a man who had a plan.
Yeah.
And it was not something that was natural or something that they would assume would be. One thing is expectancy. They did not expect or could not expect what he was going to do, but he had a plan for the solution to those problems. Mm-hmm. And that was very different.
Mm-hmm. And it was a viable plan.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It was a plan that could be natural. Implemented.
Yes.
Already worked out. I ain't got to worry about what I'm going to do next. I ain't got to go sit down at the table what I'm going to do next. I already know what I'm going to do.
Had mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. Right. Laid out, mapped
when
out.
When you lay something out like that right there, you're unstoppable.
You are threatened.
Because you're able to move. So like the African people used to run across there 20 miles without stopping.
Right.
That's exactly where he was
without
at.
Without breaking the sweat.
Yeah. Right.
Because once you get that dead element in us that's saying, I want to lay down, I want to relax, mm-hmm. that somebody got to do it for me. Once we wake that man up, mm-hmm. it's not the physical body we're talking mm-hmm. about.
It's the spirit of the
it's
man.
It's the spirit of the mm-hmm. person. Mm-hmm. And that's the element that Marcus Garvey spoke to. He spoke to the spirit of the human being. Mm-hmm. And the human being would make that body guilty to make that body say, you get up and do something for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Look, I think we got someone else on the line that's going to join in our discussion. Miss Hannah Carter?
Oh, yes. How's the family?
Fine. How you doing? Yeah, Bobby Buck told me that you was going to call in. We should have Bobby on the line a little bit later. He's at another venue. But look, he told me that you talked to Malcolm X, you talked to Nelson Mandela. Can you tell us a little about your background and how did that come about?
Well, actually, I'm kind of like offspring from the 1965 Watts riot. And we had an altercation and I was like 15 at the time. Well, yeah, about 17 at the time. And I joined the US organization, the Nationalists, because they were focusing on nation building.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was just as the Panthers, they had split up and I was young and I just wanted to do something to keep the black nation going.
So that was us with Ron Coringa at the time, who's Dr. Milana.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
And I didn't know too much about the Panthers at the time. After the uprise, I only was introduced to Ron Coringa when he had just started the US organization. So I didn't know what had taken place prior to that at that time. And I just knew that we needed to form some kind of alliance where we can start providing, doing, and defining for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of met Malcolm at the, he visited the center around, I think it was December, and he said a few things that stayed in my mind, that our identity, our culture, going to be at stake, and just something that I've always wanted to make sure I preserved and held on to. And I noticed that every other nationality that embraces our culture, they come up, they benefit, they prosper. And as we move forward towards more into integration, I noticed that we were losing our identity, we were losing our culture, and others were benefiting from our losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I reflect back into my youth how important, how rich we were as a people because we practiced our culture and we had our identity. We defined ourselves. We were very proud and like James Brown did it so well.
Black
and proud, and it brought so much dignity out in us. And we were family-oriented. We were structured as a family. No matter what went wrong, we were still family at the end of the day.
Yeah, and, let me ask you this, because we are we're discussing Marcus Garvey, and we were discussing Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela. We're on Marcus Garvey now, and the question's on the floor. I'm going to ask you the same thing. Why do you think Marcus Garvey received so much opposition from the civil rights leaders of his time?
Well, Marcus Garvey, from my perspective, was the betrayal, his opposition was he needed to really, I guess he tried at one time to open up and get the support, have everyone come collectively, but there was a lot of betrayal that messed up that his movement and mm-hmm. resistance. I feel from the research that I've done and what have you, I think these are some of the things that we're still experiencing today. The closer we get to a movement or whatever, there's always some resistance of our from not within our own that prevents it from materializing to its ultimate or to its, you know, the goal that we're searching and reaching for. So I really think we're experiencing the same behavior today that we were doing in the Marcus Garvey movement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I want to ask you a couple more questions before we let you go. How did you come in contact with Nelson Mandela?
Nelson Mandela spoke here at the he was at the sports arena, I think it was in 72, I believe. And he gave a speech there, and I never really honestly was feeling Mandela after reading some of Chancellor Williams and Dr. John Henry Clark's materials and actually meeting Dr. John Henry Clark in 1970. I had a little different about Mandela because he did the same thing that our back in the Third Dynasty, Mims, if you know the who was the ruler in the time that let the invaders
into Egypt
stay in when we were booting them out and taking back our land, charge of our land. He did the same identical thing, and the same thing is happening just like 3,000 years ago.
Yeah, in South. That's interesting. Yeah, we're going to get into that a little deeper now. I have some guests here. Do anyone want to ask Hannah a question? Anyone want to ask Hannah a question? Did you come in touch with the Nation of Islam out here or the Black Panthers?
I was in touch with the, after hearing Malcolm X, I joined the Nation of Islam in 71. And back then it was nation building. It was nothing like it is today. It was doing for self, educating for self, providing for self, and defining yourself. And it was more of a nation building than what it is today. So, you know, I kind of, got my foundations from the first, they called it.
Yeah, the first resurrection. Yeah.
Yes,
okay, wonderful.
That was in 58.
Yes.
One more question before I let you go. Can you tell us, what are you involved in now? What are you involved with the organization out here now?
Well, to be honest with you, I've tried. I was with Muhammad Nasruddin, Recycling Black Dollars, trying to keep black businesses networking with one another. I opened up the first institute of fine braidery arts, that's to practice alternative hair care practice, because once they deregulated manufacturers in 94, I took it very personal. Mm-hmm. And I know that we had no defense against these chemicals that are destroying our images and that we destroying our health, our finances, and every phase of the black woman and the children and the men.
Okay.
So I opened the first Institute of Fine Grady Arts to have an alternative, and I had to go through the Secretary of State to do it.
All right.
I was approved because we have a right to practice our culture, and our hair is art.
Yeah.
So it went over very
Well, let me say this, Hannah. I know Bobby is planning on having you on the show in the next couple of weeks, and I'm looking forward to getting you in the studio.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, so thank you very much for
here with each other.
Yes.
I was just going to say that I remember Hannah's shop that was in Leimert Park. Are you still braiding hair?
Well, no. I've got over 400 and something entrepreneurs out there now.
Wonderful.
Everyone is being very productive and keeping the culture going, hair art going. I opened a health and wellness center in Leimert Park a couple of years now, and I just retired in December 2013.
Good for you.
Okay, Hannah.
So who am I speaking with, the sister that remembers me?
This is Ann Ali.
Ann Ali. I remember Ann Ali.
You remember my mom, probably, Ethel Hayes.
Ethel Hayes?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Please give your mom's greetings.
I can do that only in prayer because she's no longer here with us.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry to hear that. Oh.
It certainly is a small world.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Hannah, thank you very much. We're going to look forward to getting you into here in the station.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, and I'll let Bobby know. So I know he's looking forward to getting you in here on his show.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
Okay, that's Hannah Carter. That's interesting. Like you said, small world.
Very small world.
Okay, let's continue with our, we just got through talking about the self-help program that laid the foundation for the success of the Marcus Garvey movement, and we talked about how he inherited that from the self-help program of Booker T. Washington. The next thing I want to talk about is another foundation for the success of the Garvey movement was the publicity organ that he had called the Negro World. And you mentioned earlier that he was educated in Europe. He was educated in London, and he worked as a printer under a very brilliant man named Dusi Muhammad Ali, who ran a newspaper called the Orient Review. And this is where Garvey learned about the newspaper business, and this is when he emphasized to Garvey the importance of having an organ that can reach out and touch the people no matter where you're at. So the Negro World became that. And if you notice, when Malcolm developed, I think Muhammad Speaks.
Yeah, Muhammad Speaks.
Yeah, starting off when Muhammad Speaks, it served the same purpose. And this is when the movement really began to grow, when you have something. And I think this is very important.
Mass
networking, too.
Today.
Especially now, when we have all of these blogs, et cetera, like that. Yeah. Anybody want to comment on that? Mm-hmm.
I would like to comment on the significance of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to take that Sankofa bird and fly back in time and pick up some of the valuables we lost. We learned a lot from the communication of the Muhammad Speaks newspaper and various other newspapers. While we need our own newspaper, we need to speak our own language, our own philosophical language. We need to speak our own words and not allow people to put words into our mouths. This is what would be so valuable today if we just had a paper that wasn't afraid to speak out on issues without being afraid of stepping on somebody's toes. That's what we need right now.
Oftentimes, though, when you do that, you're considered the radical. Because now you're trying to unify the masses in a mass way, just like we have the internet now and Instagram and Twitter and all these mega communication tools, mm-hmm. the newspaper would serve as the same instrument, only it's a more broad spectrum, you know, and a hand-to-hand spectrum instead of just downloading or whatever that you do on the internet. You know, this is more personal.
Yeah.
And then let me also point out that at the same time, you had probably the tremendous growth of the NAACP under Dr. Du Bois, who also developed an organ called the Crisis, Magazine, mm-hmm. which was an excellent piece. And is, you know, it's not as powerful as it is now as it was then. The third thing that we want to mention about the Garvey movement, we talk about the self-help, we talk about the publicity organ, and the third thing is he connected the African-centric movement. In other words, he started talking about back to Africa, yeah. and this is something else that he inherited from Dusi Muhammad Ali, even though you had a lot of other so-called African-centric, if you want, which... I also thought it was important to the movement. But one last thing before we move on, because we also want to move on and start talking about Malcolm X right now. What was the effect of Marcus Garvey on Malcolm X? Who can want to talk about that, the influence?
I mean, his father was a Garveyite.
Right.
Father was
right.
You know what I'm saying? And, just to note, you know, that I don't know how a person would feel when somebody go kill my father. Because of his beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, that probably would stand me till I die.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's easy when one, in, I mean, he comes from a powerful man.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, therefore, it's in him, and he just needs somebody to bring that up back up, just bring it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Honorable Muhammad brought it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He brought all that back out to him. He didn't reach back for that, but what was in him already, he just brought it out.
Okay.
And that made him powerful.
Yeah,
I was going to say that's why it's so important. You know, they say the first 5 years of a child,
it is.
He was exposed to that and his father at those first 5 years. And I don't care how dormant that lies, it is there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, let's look at Malcolm X and his break from the Nation of Islam and the honor of Elijah Muhammad. What do you think was the impact of Malcolm's break from the Nation on the community, and then on Malcolm, when he broke away from the Nation of Islam?
I feel, I wish it could have been a smoother break, because Malcolm was a very valuable person. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a very valuable man. And I just wish it could have been a division not like it ended.
Amicable. Mm-hmm. You know, on friendly terms.
I believe it. I know it affected me deeply, you know, the breakup, because of the significance of what they meant. But I think it affected everybody. It affected even the nation. It affected, I believe, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in a sense. Mm-hmm. It's because Malcolm was like one of his chosen sons.
Right.
Yeah. He was. I mean, I've heard him say that. Mm-hmm. Malcolm was very close to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
And I feel like that slowed down the movement.
The momentum
was slowed down because they had gained
the momentum,
at that time.
Visual.
Right. The
perception.
Visionaries that they were, the vision became a little bit dimmer once they went their separate ways, because now the nation is torn. Should we listen to Malcolm, or should we still continue to follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad?
Yes.
So the rift began right there.
This is why we have to be aware that we live in a very, very a society that tear things apart. I mean, had not we allowed that malignancy to get inside of the nation, like it did, it wouldn't have happened. But during that time, we did have a malignancy. You could see it. You could see the FBI, what do you call
Brutal
it?
Islam.
You could see that was the base of it. The base of it was to divide, just like they're doing right now.
Divide and conquer. It's the same philosophy.
Nothing has changed.
Right.
That's why we have to change.
Mm-hmm.
Since the system is not going to change, then the change is left up to us.
Exactly.
We have to change. We have to see the malignancy that is among us right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to stand up and cast it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just wanted to say, too, to add on to that, is that it brought on a real learning period. We were young. I was in college, that sort of thing. But it brought on a real thoughtful period because here we admired Malcolm. Mm-hmm. We admired the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And then when the break came, it caused us to start thinking, start reevaluating. It made us grow
mm-hmm.
through that experience because they both were very pivotal right. Figures.
Dynamic.
At that time.
Let me throw this out. Why do you think J. Edgar Hoover viewed Malcolm X as a possible black messiah who could unify the black mass?
Anybody that do what Malcolm did, you better put him on your list because the Nation of Islam went from a few people to 300,000 or 400,000 in a little bit of time,
mm-hmm.
right? And a little more time if he had, if I left him here on Earth a little bit longer,
mm-hmm.
oh, he'd have been on top of things.
And Malcolm had began to appear to what they fear most, the youth.
Youth.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The colleges.
Right.
Black colleges. And white colleges.
Yeah.
He was appealing to everybody. And this is why he was so feared.
Mm-hmm.
On the level of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he was appealing to mostly church people that had experienced racism, but going into another dimension of the program, Malcolm could have, they believe that Malcolm could have took it there. That's what they feel.
Mm-hmm. Can I say
something? Mm-hmm.
If you look back at the history, right, even the people that was with Marcus Garvey, a lot of people, young people,
mm-hmm.
the people that come into the Nation of Islam after Malcolm got there were young people, right? The people that came in, helped Martin Luther King and his movement were young people.
The same with Barack Obama.
The ones who came to Mandela were young people.
Mm-hmm.
See, and that's why with the Black Panthers, they had to cut it because people like Bunchy Carter and Fred Hampton, who had influence over gang members, would have overtoppled things. You know, put it over top of them.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say, I've been around for 100 years, you just don't know. No, mm-hmm. you just don't know how far I can go.
Let's slide over to Dr. King for a minute. What do you think was the impact of Dr. King receiving the Nobel Peace Prize and speaking out against the Vietnam War?
I know it caused him his death speaking out about that Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing. Even I believe that John F. Kennedy was killed about trying to stop a war.
Those
billionaires say, you're not finna get in the way of my money.
That money, mm-hmm. that's right.
Well, let me just touch on something, a couple of things real quick, because one of the things that happened with Dr. King, and this is why when you think about the Hoover memo, he considered Dr. King to be the threat to become the next black messiah if he moved away from the whole concept of nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so when Dr. King started, when he received the Nobel Peace Prize, they gave him an international voice.
Yeah.
And then so when he started using that international voice to break away from the regular preacher talk,
mm-hmm.
you know, life after death and all that kind of stuff in another world, mm-hmm. and started speaking of the Vietnam War, this made him a danger. But let's slide into three things that Dr. King say is the biggest threat to the future of America. You know, I'd like to get quick comments on that. He said it was militarism, poverty, and racism. Mm-hmm. Those three. He pointed out those three. And anybody want to touch on that real quick? We kind of winding down when we get to the community calendar. We better get to some of our monologues.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, let me just roll on through then. Because what I want to talk about is I wanted to get into Nelson Mandela because I really found something that Hannah said so interesting that I still got it in my mind. I got to go look at it now. She talked about comparing the South African movement to what was happening in ancient Egypt, you know, in terms of kicking out the invaders who had come in like that. But you know what? Let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back and try to get into some more discussion and some of our monologues.
This is the community calendar for the month of February. Thursday, February the 6th, 2014. The Roby Theater Company will continue their celebration of 20 years of Black theater from 1994 to 2014. The theme, Community as History Detective. You are asked to explore, discover, learn, come with a curious mind, enjoy reading, have an interest in cultural history, and display a sense of adventure. This is the second in a series of workshops for the Roby Theater Company. And from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the Afro-American Firefighters Museum. The museum is located at 1401 South Central Avenue, Los Angeles, 921. This is a free event, and all are invited to participate. Light refreshments will be served. And for more information, please call 626-486-2460 or email goToRoby@gmail.com. Upcoming guests on the Qumran Report will be Umar A. Hakim. He's with To Have a Vision Organization. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. The call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our hosts.
Okay, we're going to move right into one of our monologues by Marcus Garvey. So here's Lee Shaw doing a monologue from one of the speeches of Marcus Garvey.
Where is the black man's government? Where is his king and kingdom? Where is his president, his country, his army, his navy? I could not find them anywhere, so I declared, I will help to make them. If Europe is for the European, then I say Africa for the African. It is time for a new way of thinking. We must begin to think for ourselves and do for ourselves a new way of doing things. We need programs that really help our people. We have reached a time when every minute and every second must count for something done, something achieved in a cause for Africa. We need the freedom of Africa now. At this moment, I see Ethiopia stretching forth her hands unto God, and I see the angel of God taking up the standards of the red, the black, and the green, saying, follow me. If Europe is for the European, then I say Africa shall be for the black people of the world. We say it. We mean it.
Okay, Lee Shaw. Okay, we're going to come back to Lee to touch on Garvey's farewell message, but let's move over to Andrea Ross doing a piece on Dr. King called Dream On.
The shot rang out loud, April 4th, 1968. Blah, blah, blah. Like a mighty clap of thunder from a steely gray, ominous cumulus cloud. The screams followed, the cries, the tears, our worst fears came true. A lonely, mad assassin's bullet, it finally took you as the whole entire world looked on. In disbelief and utter scorn, seconds, minutes, hours later, you were pronounced dead and gone. One excruciating, collective, painful sigh. Why? Why, somebody please tell us why. What had this magnificent, articulate, brilliant, God-fearing, Nobel Peace Prize-winning man done to deserve such a horrendous fate? For he was larger than his own life. His mission, his destiny had been great, chosen to heal the wounds of racism, hatred, and malicious discontent, chosen to recreate a world the way God had truly meant. For God meant his world to be full of love, hope, and unspeakable joy for each and every individual man, woman, girl, and boy, a world full of peace and harmony where all have true self-autonomy. And you need to know we dream on. Your legacy was handed down from generation to generation, and your legacy brought civility to a hostile, divided nation. Your legacy etched on the hearts of all humankind, and your legacy brought sight to those not literally, but they were figuratively blind. You see, they were blind to the fact that all men were created free and to be treated with respect and live equally, not subjected to hatred, racism, castration, incarceration, a.k.a. Jim Crow, but liberated with the ability to simply just come and go and not to be mandated to assemble in the rear of the bus and not to be told, don't sit here, nigga, you can't sit here because you ain't one of us and you need to know we dream on. Your legacy was born on that dusty Selma, Alabama road as we marched arm in arm, hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder, heads held high. The seeds of democracy were quietly sowed as we marched arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, heads held high into a hornet's nest, a venomous snake pit of Ku Klux Klan mentality. Still you marched arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, heads held high, protesting nonviolently. Vicious dogs, hot lead bullets, bloody, bludgeoning police batons, nor pressurized firemen's water hose could quench this thirst for freedom, justice, liberty, democracy, dignity, and equality. So your story goes and your legacy just grows and grows and grows and grows. And you need to know, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that the first black president, President Barack Obama, his mantra was, yes, we can. The Vox Populi, that is Latin for the voice of the people, spoke, and we elected you. Yes, we did. Yes, we still, and yes, we will continue to overcome and dream on. Thank you.
Can you give us your contact information for those that want to get in contact with you and buy your books? And then I'm going to have Lee Charles going to close us out.
For the email address is for families, that's forfamilies, at yahoo.com.
Okay.
The name of the children's book is The Kids from Suzette Bottom.
And thank you. Now, I'd like to extend a special thanks to Will Ali, Anna Ali, Andre Ross, Lee Shaw, Hannah Carter on the phone, Earlene Anthony. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, Tumblr, Googler, Skidrow.la. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving created spirit be upon you and upon your family. And here is Lee Shaw reading the farewell speech of Marcus Garvey.
I want to thank my fellow brothers and sisters of New Orleans for your support. I say this to the millions of our members throughout the world. Cheer up, for the work has just begun. We have reached a time when every minute and every second must count for something done in the cause of Africa. Be steadfast, for the work of you, our nation, continue. And I, in life and death, will continue to serve the cause of our people. It falls to our lots to tear off the shackles that bind Mother Africa. Climb ye the heights of liberty and cease not until ye planted the banner of the red, the black, and the green upon the hilltops of Africa. I shall be with you in the physical as well as the spiritual to see the day of Africa's glory. Africa's sun is steadily, surely rising and soon shall shed its rays around the world. Look for me in the whirlwind. Look for me in the storm. You're the master of your own destiny, the architect of your own fate. One God, one aim, one destiny. Africans for Africans.
Yes. Bravo.
Are we going to live around this town? And yet we're
scare me. I know you think you've come a long way.